Welcome, foolish mortals. I'm not trying that. That sounds horrible. Welcome to the Advent Calendar House, everybody. Where tonight we're at the mercy of the rivers of time as they sweep us back to the terrifying 1985 TV special, Garfield's Halloween Adventure.
60 men all lost at sea, all of them drunk except for me. 'Twas I who had to face the storm with nothing in sight to keep me warm. Yo ho ho ho, over the raging sea we go. Yo ho ho ho, wherever the four winds blow. Hey!
I am 110-year-old cabin boy turned living nightmare Mike Westfall, and joining me for another therapy session, and wearing a mask over his face depicting a perfect replica of his actual face, it's Jeff Sumagee. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing all right.
I wish you didn't start off by saying 1985, because I did the math, and I'm old.
We're so old.
How old were you in 1985?
I was five, and freshly five. My birthday's in late September, so.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't know. 3 years? I was eight in 1985. Okay. 3 years at that age, I feel like is a lot. Like, the difference between five and eight is a lot.
Yes.
But like,
well, I can attest to that with the children in my own house. I have a five-year-old and an eight-year-old, and just to mix things up, a seven-year-old to... the free agent.
Okay, good. They're yours. That's the good thing that
they have all the best and worst qualities of me. It's wonderful. Okay.
I mean, I have some kids in the house, but none of them are mine. I don't know where they came from.
They just showed up.
A lot of times in New York, when you get an apartment, it's like, one bedroom, one bath, two-year-old. They just come with the place. That's not true. I don't have any kids. None of them are here. Please do not look into it, FBI, if you're listening.
So you saw this when you were eight? Like, you watched this the night it aired?
Oh, I sure did. I mean, even by 8 years old, I was a Garfield nut. One of my earliest memories is in, I guess, first grade. How old are you in first grade?
Five, six.
So yeah, one of my earliest memories, first grade. I remember my first grade teacher. I don't know what she said to me. She was probably like berating me about something, and I quoted Garfield, and I said, "Hey, I'm fat, I'm lazy, and I'm proud of it." One of my earliest memories. So you better believe I was a true blue Garfield fan from like day dot. And hearing about this special, I made sure that the whole family was home for this airing and that I was laying on the floor doing damage to my back by, you know, propping your head up on your arms as you do as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
In 1985. And that's where I would have been. I probably would have been fresh off the street, doing some Halloween trick-or-treating for this thing. Did it air on Halloween?
It was the night before.
Okay.
October 30th, 1985, or Mischief Night, as it's known where I grew up in South Jersey.
Oh. What do you do on Mischief Night?
You're toilet papering houses, you're throwing eggs at houses. You're just trashing people's property.
Okay, cool. I like places that spread it out. I feel like where I was raised, Staten Island, everyone just did it all on the same night. It was like Halloween. You went out trick-or-treating, and you knew to get off the streets by sundown because that's when the kids with the eggs and the shaving cream came out, and that's when you had to get home to watch some Garfield stuff.
There you go.
But I respect places that kind of spread it out, made it into like a whole weekend event of a thing, of like terror the night before, candy the night of. That sounds good. That sounds fun.
This special does it the opposite way. When it premiered,
candy then horror.
Premiered as it was called Garfield in Disguise the first night it aired, or at least that's the official title IMDb tells me. But I found a 1985 copy, purportedly a 1985 copy on YouTube. The days of the week match up. It said Wednesday at 8 or whatever, and October 30th, 1985 was indeed a Wednesday. And it still said Garfield's Halloween Adventure, so whatever, IMDb.
Do you think that was one of those things? Because the book, if I remember correctly, the book came out around the same. Right? Because, like, the book is Garfield in Disguise. And do you – because the main title in the TV show is Garfield's Halloween Adventure.
Right.
And it's not like they changed that title card at any point, I don't think. So maybe it was just like, we don't know what it's going to be called. TV Guide is just like, let's just call it Garfield in Disguise.
There we
first
go.
Year or whatever. I don't know.
Probably.
I don't know.
Garfield
None
Disguise,
of this is based on facts.
Yeah. Well, and it went through that. The books have that theming of Garfield's always in something or on something. He's on the town. He's in the rug.
Right. In paradise.
In paradise.
Indisposed. That was the one where it was just all of him in the bathroom. He had some very bad lasagna the night before, and it was Garfield indisposed.
Yeah.
I'll just be, okay. Whatever. Like I said, really big Garfield fan. Had all the books, even the ones in the bathroom.
Well, so were the people who were handing out Emmy Awards, because this was the third straight Garfield special to win the Primetime Emmy for Outstanding Animated Program. But don't be too impressed. The only other nominee this year was Garfield in Paradise.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, if you had to give the Emmy to one of them.
This is the one you give it to.
Yeah. Was there anything else? I mean, sure, those are the only two nominated, but was there anything else that year, I wonder? I'm not going to do that research.
Not coming to the top of my head at the moment. But. Yeah.
Oh, you mean you don't remember every animated special that came out when you were five?
No, they're on a spreadsheet. I didn't memorize the spreadsheet. I just saved it. But this was directed by Phil Roman, the second ever production of his new animation company, Film Roman.
Hmm.
Great name for a company. Now famous for taking over the source animation of The Simpsons for most of its run. But it got its start with these Garfield specials and then the Garfield and Friends series.
Wow. This is like one of those Quantum Leap type of conundrums. Like if you can go back in time and stop him from making The Simpsons have so many seasons, would you trade one Garfield Halloween Adventure for all of the bad seasons of The Simpsons? I don't know.
Yeah, I need this in my life because I need to be terrified.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah, let's talk about that. One of the probably the most is this the most straight up terrifying kids movie or kids TV show to have been released, and is that why we don't see it anymore?
I think it might be, because you think of other stuff that they market to kids, but it's really for adults. Like, they had Beetlejuice toys, and they made a cartoon out of that, and they had, like, a little talking Freddy Krueger doll that they marketed to kids. But this was clearly a kid special that, I believe the quote from Jim Davis was, he wanted to at least terrify a four-year-old.
Hmm.
That was the goal for writing this special.
He has some very specific kinks. If I could terrify one four-year-old, I wonder if you asked him these days what like his main drive is if he would want to terrify four-year-olds these days. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a whole different beast nowadays. But
I mean, this definitely covers some, I mean, not just terrifying, but more adult-themed stuff. Like, you don't get a lot of references to drunk people in kids' shows these days. And this Halloween special had a song all about how 15 men all lost at sea, all of them drunk except for me.
Yes.
I mean, like, outside of it being terrifying, is it the subject matter that they're covering? I don't mean to jump ahead. Maybe we'll get to that in a little bit. Should we start at the very beginning?
We probably should, but I don't think was going to bring that up, so thank you for doing that.
I mean, look, I barely watch any kids' TV these days, but I don't think that in the new season of SpongeBob, he's using the word drunk.
Nope.
Yeah, explicitly the word drunk.
All right, let's get into it. We open at sunrise as Garfield is fast asleep in his cat box, a large lump under his blanket. I totally used to sleep like that under my blanket. Mm.
In a cat box?
Well, so a bit of a larger bed, but otherwise the same.
So growing up, I always thought that that was like the litter box that he was sleeping in. Because cats don't really sleep in boxes or under blankets. So I had a misconception that cats slept in their litter box. I did not know what happened in a litter box. I don't know if that's a universal experience.
I didn't know enough about cats at that age that I was just like, he's got a tiny bed and he's a large cat.
Right? Yeah. I don't think... Does anyone buy beds for their cats? Is this supposed to be like...
Oh, people buy beds for their pets. It's like, even the cats. Like, the dog bed is the one that you see most of the time. Sure. But there's gotta be.
I don't know, I feel like you would buy a bed for a cat and then they would just sleep in the box that it came in, right? They're like children that way.
Yeah, probably. A for effort.
Yeah. I mean, I always did want to sleep in a box under a blanket like that because, again, I wanted to be Garfield. I identified Garfield. But then the one thing that really struck me immediately in this special, is that the TV is on the test pattern, and TVs don't end broadcast days anymore. They don't end broadcast days. They don't start broadcast days. So maybe that's what I'm trying to do in this, Mike, is discover why we don't see this special anymore, because it's amazing. There has to be some reason why they don't show it. Is it because kids wouldn't understand a broadcast day ending?
I can imagine. I haven't shown this to my kids yet because the youngest is 5 this year. Maybe this is the year. But yeah. Before that, he was my excuse to be like, no, they're too young. But yeah, this is nothing. I can see myself having to pause for 5 minutes to explain the slate.
Right. Like, years, 30 years ago, TVs would go to bed and they would make this horrible noise to wake you up to make sure you went to bed too. You could just sleep through it. It's fine.
And that's why some people need white noise machines.
Yeah. Oh, I wonder if they sell a white noise machine that's just like the test pattern noise.
So we witnessed the beginning of the broadcast day for TV station WBOR, a joke I totally didn't get as a 5-year-old.
So it's just like boring?
Bore. The call letters are bore.
Okay. I thought maybe, like, I'm old now, and I feel like I would get most of the subtext in a Garfield special. But part of me was like, am I missing something that was a thing in 1985? Like, WBOR or whatever, but it's just they needed the W, which means, I don't know how much you know about radio, but W means that they are east of the Mississippi.
Correct.
So we can start to narrow down where Garfield lives.
Yes. I believe Ohio, or no, Indiana.
Hmm.
Well, that's where Jim Davis is from, so that's what I'm just defaulting to.
Okay.
But right. WBOR is an actual station, but it's a radio station in Brunswick, Maine. So shout out to Maine. Thanks for listening, Maine.
So Garfield either lives in Maine or Indiana, did you say?
Yes.
Indiana. Okay.
But here the joke is, it's the easy viewing, easy listening station, but it starts at the crack of dawn by introducing us for the first time to Binky the Clown.
This is the first Binky.
This is the first Binky. And this part of the joke I did get as a 5-year-old. I would hate to wake up to that and be coerced into doing jumping jacks while half asleep before realizing, what am I doing?
I mean, look, at that age, like I said, I told my teacher I was fat, lazy, and proud of it. Yeah, exercise was the worst thing I could think of. But I had no idea this was the first Binky the Clown. Not even in the – surely in the strip there was a Binky appearance before this?
I think he might have been mentioned before this is what I read, but this was his first visual appearance. So this is the first look we get of him.
What's Binky's thing? Like, is he just like a local access, low rent kids show thing? Is that what we're...
I think so. I think he's supposed to be like really loud bozo.
Okay.
So
it's weird in this day and age. The thing that I reach for is Weird Al in UHF.
Hey, Bobo, want to play a game? Okay. Look up. Look down. Now look at Mr. Frying Pan.
Like, that's what I think of, which is funny because that's a parody of all the things that Binky is supposed to be a parody of, I feel.
Yeah.
Like, so, all right, a loud bozo. Got it.
Yes. And that shrill, screaming voice of Binky the Clown is Tom Hughes, who's the voice of John. So you have that same dynamic here that you'll later see with Dan Castellaneta as both Homer Simpson and Krusty the Clown.
Oh, interesting. I wonder how many other clowns were portrayed by the main actor.
I don't know. That's a very, it's like a two-person group.
Yeah, there's a paper to be written. I'm not going to write it. So he does the exercises.
Free content, people. Yeah, Garfield, well, he finds the remote and he turns off Binky, but not before catching some passing comment about tonight being the night you can get a lot of candy. So here he's frantically trying to find the channel again, which he does and learns it's the morning of Halloween. And Garfield switches to his Lou Rawls voice for our opening number, This is the night.
This is the night
I was created for. I'm gonna put on my best disguise and go knocking on everybody's door.
So is Garfield hearing this music or... And is he singing along, or is he supposed to be singing, and that's his singing voice, when Lorenzo Music is his talking voice?
I don't know, because Lorenzo Music also sings in this special.
Right. So, what are we led to believe here?
It's a tough one, because usually Lou Rawls' songs are more third-person narratives. Mm. But here he's singing in the first person, so...
Yeah.
It could be Garfield kind of imagining what his singing voice would be, and then when he's talking to Odie or something,
he has
the Lorenzo Music voice.
So kind of like when I'm singing in my head, it sounds like Adele, but then when I'm actually singing to someone, it sounds like me singing to someone.
I have something that's called perfect pitch, which means I can... recognize music notes, which means I can hear exactly how badly I sing.
Wow, really?
Yes. So it's like, in my head, I sing great, but I can hear how bad it is in real life, and it's just like, nope, never singing.
Wow, so I'm not going to do it, but if I were like to hum a tone, you would be like F sharp and a terrible F sharp, by the way.
Yeah, basically.
Wow.
It's a gift and a curse.
Wow. That's awesome. How did you realize?
Someone told me that. Like, mentioned in passing, my friend who plays the piano, I waste this gift. I don't know how to play a darn thing.
Wow.
And I'm sorry.
Do you think you could just, like, set up on a street corner and be like, I will guess your note for a dollar? And just, like, you pay me a dollar, you hum a note, and I'll be like, yeah, that's a B flat. Give me the dollar.
Probably. I should look into that. Busking around Orlando.
Yes, you know, you gotta make hustle any way you can. What I did like about this opening scene is that at one point he picks up a lamp, takes the lampshade off, puts the lampshade on his head, sings into the light bulb as if it's a microphone. But then, very unlike Garfield, puts the lampshade back on, puts the lamp back on the table, and continues on dancing. I felt that Garfield would have just been like, and drop on the floor and walk away. But yeah, very rarely conscientious Garfield.
Excited about Halloween that he's actually catching himself being responsible for no reason.
Right? See, when left to our own devices, deep down we're all good people.
we are inherently good if you just let us do our thing, man.
Deep down, I believe Garfield is good.
Yes.
So excited that he goes right back to sleep.
Yes. Wakes up later, candy, 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 which became the Halloween morning war cry in my house.
Mm-hmm. Yep. To the point where your parents would probably be like, what is he doing? Because they don't remember. Parents never remember the shows of the kids.
No.
Like a kid sees something once, boom, absorbed in like a sponge. Parents could see the same thing. They're not really paying attention.
No.
Honestly, like, do you think my parents really paid attention to this? They knew I liked Garfield, but they're not looking at the nuances that I was in this show. Not at all. Not at all. Like the nuance of who scoops a pumpkin after they've carved the face into it. it. Yes. John.
So we cut to the kitchen where we find John carving a jack-o'-lantern.
Ugh.
Which goes flying after Garfield scares John from under his blanket. Another dumb thing I noticed here, but the pumpkin lands on John's head upright.
Mm-hmm.
So his head goes through it from the bottom, which wasn't carved open, and yet somehow doesn't destroy the entire pumpkin on impact.
Yeah. I think part of our research into this, we should go and get a pumpkin, carve a face in it, but not scoop it out, and see how much force it takes for a head to go through the bottom of a pumpkin. That would probably be enough to kill an actual human, right? Like, you just bonk someone on the head with a pumpkin, their head's not going to go into it. There's no jokes here. That's murder one.
Yeah, not, well, as high as it up as it flew, it flies out of frame and then back onto his head. I don't know how heavy this pumpkin is, but...
Ooh, looks like about 14 pounds to me.
Best case scenario, you're going to the doctor and embarrassingly having to tell them how you got concussed.
He would go to Liz. He would be so embarrassed to go to the doctor. It would just be like, oh, Liz, take this off my head. Can we go on a date? Boo.
At least he's got Liz. But... This whole segment's got a couple of underrated lines. First is, Halloween's my middle name, Gar Halloweenfield. Mm-hmm. In that exact cadence, which I feel like that line alone has dictated my awkward joke delivery tone of voice for the rest of my life. It's perfect.
Yep, I agree. I have often accidentally, not knowing, quoting this, done that. Where I'm like, Jeff Pizzeria. That's my middle name, as if I don't actually have a last name.
Right.
But yeah. And it also has the wonderful delivery of Garfield going, Wahoo!
Yes, that was the next one.
You're probably wondering what I'm doing with this pumpkin on my head.
Wahoo! There's a pumpkin on your head. Hey, I hadn't noticed.
I've never said wahoo when surprised, but now I think I'm going to have to
I think we will.
Start.
And I also have always referred to pumpkin guts as pumpkin innards because of this scene as well. Now, but the question I have is, do pumpkin innards look like lasagna?
No,
I don't think so.
Not even when it's still in the pumpkin goop, that just a pile of slime that comes out of there. But and Garfield thinks it to be someone, the lasagna persuasion.
Persuasion, lasagna persuasion. Persuasion is another one of those things. And as someone who loves this line, pumpkin innards thinking they look like lasagna, every time I have lasagna, I look at it very closely and think, does this look like pumpkin innards? And vice versa. Whenever I'm carving a pumpkin, I'm like, could I mistake this for lasagna? And part of me at age 42 wonders if, as a kid at age 8, I did try and eat a handful of pumpkin innards thinking it might taste like lasagna, but I probably blacked out whether or not. Did you ever take a handful of raw pumpkin innards?
Not raw, but I mean, roasted and salted, they're quite good. But
right? Doesn't taste anything like lasagna at that point.
No, not even close. That looked like little sunflower seeds almost, is what I'm thinking of.
Mm-hmm. I do like my wife, as we rewatched this minutes before recording, my wife said, I just want you to say on the record on this podcast that I appreciate, this is her speaking, I appreciate that Garfield stole the apple along with all the other bad food on the breakfast tray.
Yes.
In that scene, by the way.
Doesn't mention the apple. It mentions some other stuff. Sweet roll, bacon, a croissant, as he pronounces it.
Mm. What's a sweet roll?
Like a cinnamon bun, it looked like.
Okay. Yeah, it looked like, but I don't know. Look, he's in Indiana or maybe Maine. They have different foods there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But a pot of coffee and an apple, which is everything in the background of every cereal commercial in the 80s when it has to convey that it's part of a complete breakfast.
Yes, right. Here, have a bowl full of this sugar crap. As long as you eat four apples and a glass of orange juice, it will be somehow balanced.
There you go.
So see, Garfield has taken that note and he's like, yeah, I can drink this coffee. I can have the sweet roll and bacon and crescent. As long as I eat that apple. You know, he's looking after himself.
There you go.
Yeah.
Again, responsible when candy's on the line.
Really painting a picture of Garfield being way more responsible than anyone gives him credit for.
Yeah. And we follow that up with a taste of Garfield's stand-up bit about Odie being stupid and ugly.
Odie's so stupid he'd have to stand on a chair to raise his IQ. He's ugly, too. It would take two of them to get any uglier.
Oh, my God. Nothing kids love more than insult comedy a la Don Rickles. I know when I was eight, I knew who Don Rickles was and what it was all like. Insult comedy? Sure, I guess. I don't know. Does that hold up in these days?
Probably not. But, I mean, of course, Don Rickles is now... and forever a beloved children's character in Mr. Potato Head. So it all comes full circle.
I thought you were going to say is now and forever dead.
Well, also that.
Yes, also that. That's a very weird way of putting it, but yes.
Problem solved. But Garfield's little stand-up, it gives him the idea to take Odie trick-or-treating with him so he can get twice as much candy. And he tells Odie, tonight's the night dogs have to help cats go out and get candy, and if a dog does a good job, he'll get a whole single piece of candy of his very own.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog buys it. Jeff, I wonder how many kids saw this and tried it on their kid siblings and what the success rate might have been.
I gotta say, you know, I tried it on my older sister. She was not buying it.
Nah, can't be too high, I'd imagine.
Yeah, no. I'm really hoping that someone out there does have a story about it working and having their stupid younger kid, like, just for a single piece of candy for the whole night. I mean, that's the dream, isn't it?
It
like,
really
look,
is.
Even at age 42 now, I'm mentioning my age a lot on this show. Even in my 40s now, when I can just go to the Walgreens that's a block away and buy as much candy as I want, the idea of getting twice as much candy as you deserve on Halloween still kind of tickles my pleasure bone. That sounds gross. Tickles my pleasure center, my Halloween bone.
It hits the spot.
There you go. Yeah. Thank you.
That's the G-rated. But even we have the theme parks down here do their own trick-or-treating events. So every time we go, we went to SeaWorld, and they had little stations where they handed out candy. And every once in a while, some of them would just like, here, Dad, this one's for you. Just, thank you. So.
Yeah, free candy is always so much better.
Right.
So, like, at SeaWorld, is it just, like, fish?
They have people dressed in costumes that are basically fish with masks. Mm. Like, here's a clownfish, and here's a ghost fish.
And do they just hand out, like, the little kippers that you then feed to the dolphins? And like, oh, take these home.
No, it's Skittles, M&M. Like, we have a whole bag full of stuff. They load them up, too. Like, they did pretty well.
Wow.
No, Disney just like throw stuff in your bag. They're over generous. Just like, here are 87 tiny Tootsie Rolls. Get these out of here so we don't have to clean up time.
The cure is worse than the disease on that one. Tootsie Rolls. I actually like Tootsie Rolls.
I love Tootsie Rolls.
Especially the flavored ones.
Oh, yeah. They're the best. Like, I don't like the vanilla ones, though, but the rest are great. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where we will differ. Send your vanilla ones up here.
There you go.
Don't worry. Perfect. I'll eat them.
Yeah. No, my brother and sister were way too smart to fall for that bit.
Were you the oldest?
I was the oldest, yes.
Oh, okay. All right. Did you ever fall for it when they tried it on you?
No, but there had to have been some gullible young kids out there.
Yeah. If you're the gullible young kid, or if maybe you took advantage of a gullible young kid, please write in to
Twitter at Advent Cowhouse.
There you go.
Boom.
Let's get some of those stories.
All right.
Yeah.
But Garfield and Odie head up to the attic to find costumes, and we get a spectacular view of an attic full of stuff because John has never thrown anything away. Has your attic ever looked like anything like this, just a hodgepodge of things?
We didn't have really a standing up in attic.
Yeah, neither did I. We and had always, we just had a crawl space.
Yeah, like the only thing I can think of, the only attic story I have is 1 year we went up into that crawl space and brought down my mom's manger, and it's like, wait, didn't this used to have like a shepherd as well? And then we put it all back, and then we brought it down the next year, and a raccoon had actually broken into our attic, and there was a hornet's nest in the attic as well.
Oh, no.
So what the raccoon did was it opened the box, grabbed the shepherd out of the manger scene because it was hollow. It was like plastic and hollow on the bottom. Shoved the hornet's nest into the bottom of the shepherd and then shoved that in the corner of the attic. So a year later, we found a shepherd full of a dead hornet's nest in the other end of the thing. And it's like, oh, I knew we had this. And we're like, oh, that must have been when we had the raccoon in the attic. And it must have, like, yeah. So that's my attic story. That's
the worst mystery ever.
Yes. Like, I mean, luckily, all the hornets were gone.
Yeah,
by the time
I mean, that could have ended way worse.
Right? Like you pick up a shepherd and be like, oh, we finally, and then just get stung to death. And then you fall down the ladder to the first floor.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds like my crawl space, just various wooden planks to crawl on to avoid falling through the ceiling.
Yeah. A lot of weirdly exposed fiberglass.
Yeah.
Up there to be like, oh, don't touch it. Well, Dad, right. Why not cover it? Oh, we don't need to cover it. But.
But we walk up here, we crawl up here every year to get down decorations.
Yeah, that's not fun. I don't know. And it looks like cotton candy, so you just want to eat
it.
It
does. Doesn't help that they advertised with a cartoon character.
Right? What the hell is that about? Like, the Pink Panther, right? You're talking about the Pink Panther?
Yeah, Owens Corning fiberglass insulation.
Right. Use the pink stuff. And then you look at it and you're like, this looks soft. This looks edible. It has a cartoon character on it. I should either pet or eat this thing. But yet, no, you're not allowed to do any of that.
Right up there in the middle of a small collection of various seasonal decorations and old stuff my mom didn't want to throw out.
And hornets.
Nope. My garage is where I keep whatever now. And it's a little like this, only with a touch more daylight and the unforgiving humidity of Central Florida.
You should just sprinkle some like Corning fiberglass around just to give your kids the same experience. Be like, you know, there's going to be some pink stuff there. Just don't touch it.
You have to crawl to get through.
Yeah. And the John's attic really does seem like the hoarder's attic where he's going to die and it's just going to be a burden on whoever has to clean it up after he's gone, you know? Like,
well, it seems like the burden was on him to begin with because some of the stuff Garfield takes out of that box, like it starts with John's first bow tie, but then it goes with like Cousin Wanda's wig, Aunt Orpha's false teeth, Roy Ogle's roots, which is a passing joke that only maybe five people got. So here, Jim Davis grew up on a farm in Indiana. Roy Ogle is a retired plant breeder who worked at Clemson University and created several varieties of peas and sweet potatoes. And the only reason I know that is because I looked it up while taking these notes.
Wow.
That's the joke. They're old sweet potatoes.
All right. I'm going to write that down. Roy Ogle. Ogle's roots? Is that what it
roots
was?
Roots is what
honestly,
Garfield called them.
Over the last 40, however many years, I've been watching this. And I've watched it every year since it aired, pretty much, you know, give or take. I never really caught that or decided to look into it. And now I'm going to look into that and maybe get a tattoo of Roy Ogle's roots.
Well, I think the first search result for Roy Ogle's roots was a Reddit thread in the Garfield subreddit. Mm. What are Roy Ogle's roots? And then I went down that rabbit hole. Sorry, wrong show.
It's close enough.
But it's followed by the much easier to digest joke of everything Garfield tosses out of the box, Odie puts on, and he looks like a silly clown with devil horns that startles Garfield.
Mm-hmm.
Quick laugh before they move on and find the mother load, a chest of old clothes the two rummage through during the Lorenzo music song, What Should I Be?
What should I be? There's so many sides to me.
So in this, he... Well, one of the things that he decides or he's questioning about what should he be is a big black Halloween cat. Like,
yes.
Since he's a cat, this feels slightly problematic to me.
Yeah.
Ooh. For him to be like, I'm going to
go as a big fat Halloween cat.
Just go as black.
No.
You know,
putting
like,
on black pajamas.
Yeah, yes. I guess it's more like me going as a ninja, but that's still problematic as well.
Yeah, that's right. I think because he's got the glowing eyes in that for that split seconds, and I think that calls back to the killer panther that almost kills Garfield and John in that camping special.
Yeah. Okay. Was that was before?
That was before.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Garfield camps out.
Garfield in the Rough, it's called. That's another good one to put on if you want to give your children nightmares.
Mm.
But Garfield's. Oh, go ahead.
Do you think it's maybe also a callback to the. There's like the Black Electric Panther in the Nine Lives of Garfield?
That's later. So maybe that's a callback to the same panther. I don't know.
Either way, there's a lot of scary panthers in this. But let's talk about the one that's a lot easier to talk about is the hobo.
Hobo astronaut clown robot at the same time?
Yeah. So what parse that out for me. Is it a hobo that's also those things, or is it those things that's a hobo? Never mind.
It's yeah. The only thing that makes it a hobo is the rucksack.
And wrong!
The bindle, yeah. 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 I don't know. This was a dead end of a joke. Because I didn't write down the actual parsing of it. Never mind.
I'm surprised I remembered all of it. Because I don't have notes of that. All I have is they settle on pirate costumes, complete with a skull and crossbones hat. Mm-hmm. A wooden sword and a peg leg for Garfield and a headscarf, earrings, and pegs on all four legs for Odie before Garfield removes all of them.
Yes. And in this, when the costumes are revealed, they're walking up to John, who is now actually eating lasagna.
Without pumpkin innards.
Which made me wonder how much time has passed between... So... What time did Garfield wake up and how much time did he spend in the attic? Because now it's clearly dinner time.
Right.
And they're now going to go out. So, I mean, I guess Garfield sleeps all day. So he probably woke up at like 4. And
well, I don't know. That could be John's lunch. I mean, that's the one food the supposed loser bachelor John is supposed to be knows how to make. And it's lasagna. He makes it all the time. We know his mom cooks at the farm, but I don't know. Weird Johnism.
He probably is not very regular if he's eating lasagna all the time. Another question I had in this scene is John's table very tall or are his chairs very short? Because if you think about the plane on which the table rests so Garfield can stand on it, his eye line is about the same as John's, which means that the table, when John is sitting, the table is actually about at John's neck.
Oh, yeah.
In order for those eye lines to make sense. Would you ever buy a table that's that high? Or
I mean, just we have a high table, but we also have bar stools to sit on.
Right. Do you think he bought a bar table, but then regular chairs? I mean, John's pretty much an idiot.
It's like my son sitting on the bar stool. Like, we had to get a higher bar stool just for him when he was... So, could be that.
Two bar stools taped together.
That, pretty much.
One higher than the next.
There you go. It'll be fine. Teach him how to climb. But here we go. Halloween night arrives and our heroes head out. But Odie starts to get scared of some of the costumes, and Garfield reassures him, quote, "These are kids just like us who are out trick-or-treating." And that was the first time I remember realizing the conceit of Garfield in the special, anyway, is that they're viewed as children more so than pets.
Hmm. Interesting.
I don't know if that's unique to this special. It seems like it is.
I mean, there's always the question of... who is viewing Garfield as what, and how much do they hear him say? But even outside of that, in this scene, and in fact, the rest of this special, it is revealed that in fact ghosts do exist in this universe.
Well, yeah,
because he picks up a sheet and there's nothing underneath, and later, spoilers, we'll see some real ghosts, which made me wonder. So in the Christmas special, was Grandpa's ghost watching all that happen?
No. Had to have been.
Because, I mean, if ghosts exist in this universe, that means that everyone that has died might have a ghost. Grandpa could be there. Think about that the next time you watch the Garfield Christmas special. He's like, oh, if the sky were ink and my love were hoo-hoo. And like right behind her is a spectral grandpa being like, yes, yes, it is. Read it. Weird. It's weird. It's weird to think that ghosts exist in all of this.
That makes the Christmas special make a lot more sense. It's just like he just happened to have knocked over that box full of letters. They were planted there.
They were planted there by spectral grandpa who then knocked them over and be like, do my dirty work, deliver these to my bride. I like that special more now.
Here we go.
So some pretty interesting costume design by the ghoul who made a mask of his own face.
Yeah.
Like,
so we'll back up a little bit.
Yeah.
Because here's where the special starts to slowly dip into more sinister waters as Garfield proclaims he's no scaredy cat, and Lou Rawls sings again.
I may be lazy, I may be fat, I don't do laps, and I do not chat. I may be selfish, yeah, and all of that, but the one thing I'm not is a scaredy cat.
The one thing he's not is a scaredy cat.
Or is it Garfield again?
I think it's Garfield imagining himself, like, just trying to convince himself that he's braver than he really is. As he reveals what he expects to be a kid underneath a trio of ghost and goblin costumes, only to find a pair of hairy monster feet, an actual goblin face, and nothing.
Yeah.
So which one's the scariest of those three?
I would have to say nothing. Because, like, just the thing that terrifies me is the fact of, say there's no afterlife, and you die, and there's just nothing. The idea that you are just over is terrifying.
That is horrifying.
So revealing that there is nothing is, to me, more terrifying than anything you can show. It's kind of like Jaws. By not showing Jaws, it makes it scarier than by showing Jaws. So by not showing what's under that sheet, it's way more scary that there is literally nothing under there.
That's an amazing comparison.
Yeah. I'm having an existential
crisis. Am changing my vote now because I was originally going to be like, I think it's the goblin with the mask of his own face. Somehow that's... was the most terrifying thing to me. And, but no, you know what it is? It's because he grabs at them. You see him try and grab at Garfield and Odie as they run away. They do a couple of circles around each one before they tear off. That's just for show, not actually an effective escape plan. Don't try that at home, kids.
I have run around muggers so many times going, it works. It sometimes works. Does you got to just show them that you're crazier than they are.
There you go. They're just stunned into...
But yeah, the fact that that goblin-faced kid, they pull the mask off of the goblin. There's a goblin underneath. They run around. And then he, like, swipes at them.
Mm-hmm.
And you just think, like,
whoa,
what would he have done if he had gotten them? It's terrifying.
Yep. It's
terrifying.
Well, then they start to actually go to houses using the standard Halloween greeting, gimme. And after only getting one piece of candy each, Garfield threatens a woman at sword point for more candy. More accurately, threatens to give her living room drapes a taste of his broadsword, but still.
So, again, this brings up, what is she seeing? What is she hearing? Is she seeing a kid just waving a sword at them? Is she really terrified?
Does she think that's cute? She must, because it works! We get a montage of these two filling their bags. But that's not enough for Garfield. He notices more houses across the river, so he wants to hit up those. And we get a weird little scene here where Garfield gets a little greedy. That part's normal, but he says, the candy is mine! All mine! And then we get this little tangent.
Wait a minute. Am I being too greedy? Should I share my candy with those less fortunate than me? Am I missing the spirit of Halloween? Nah. Oh, mine! Mine, I tell you! Mine!
Which I read as a play on the old, isn't there someone out there who knows what Christmas is all about?
Right. The true meaning of Halloween is greed. So I think it's okay.
Yeah. You know? I think that was just a joke that they threw into the special and just like, nope, this is Halloween. This is what it's about.
Yeah, This Is Halloween is a song from a different special.
It sure is.
Yeah.
So they find a boat.
Yeah.
And just help themselves and start crossing the river in this boat that's not theirs.
Well, right before that, there is one joke that I've always appreciated in this is right before he notices the houses across the street, they're getting tired. He takes his peg leg off, stretches out his foot, and he just throws the peg leg into the river and it splashes off screen. And for some reason that just tickles me as if like, I'm done. I'm just going to leave this. And maybe that's why years ago when my friend's band got afloat in the New York City Halloween parade and I went as laundry. So I cut out the bottom of a laundry basket and I just sewed old clothes onto a jacket. So I just had like clothes all over me, and I walked in the parade behind this float as laundry, and I didn't want any of it. And at the end of walking all these blocks, I just took it off and left it on the street. And it was like, that's it. I'm done with Halloween. Maybe that's where I got it from. I am a Garfield. Anyway, that always tickled me, the fact that he was just like, and I'm done with this, and just threw it in the river. But then they do. They get in a boat, and they try and ford the river to those better houses on the other side. Except not all is as easy as they think it's going to be.
No.
Garfield
in full pirate mode orders Odie to put out the oars, and Odie literally puts out the oars. And away they float, leaving two domesticated house pets who don't know how to pilot a boat at the mercy of the river current.
And into the second commercial break.
Yes, they sail into the fog as Garfield shouts, I want my mommy!
Yep. Which sounds totally like something Lorenzo Music did live on mic. Instead of them, you know, doing it in post, he was just like, I want my mommy! Like, moving away from the mic rather than... it's a little behind the scenes.
Hear it, though.
Yeah.
Because they needed that effect of he's going farther away from us.
Yeah, but, you know, you could just, like, work with the levels if you're, like, a sound engineer. You know, you don't have to have someone actually move away from the mic to get farther away.
Garfield's Halloween Adventure. Sponsored by McDonald's. It's a good time for the great taste of McDonald's.
It's a good time for the great taste of McDonald's.
What do you put in your McDonald's Halloween pumpkins?
Booty and McBoo, matey.
Carrot and McGoblin. Golden McPumpkin, partner.
Now you can collect one of three different pumpkins with the purchase of every McDonald's Halloween pumpkin Happy Meal. What you put in them is up to you.
Well, after we come back from our commercial break,
yeah.
Eventually Garfield and Odie's boat runs into a small island in the middle of the river on which sits a creepy old house, and it's spooky time.
Nice touch.
Yeah, it really ramps up from this point on. They go in to warm themselves by the fire. Unbeknownst to them, there's an old man sitting in the chair by the fire. And it's not enough that he's old and gross. They ramp up the grossness by, as he is telling the story to them about these pirates that buried treasure, he starts to drool from the side of his mouth with like this little like spurt of spittle. They then animate this character to wipe that spittle away with his fingers. But that's not the end of it. He then rolls that spit in his fingers until it goes away. It is maybe one of the grossest things I have ever seen animated. And it is in this children's program.
Well, again, and here's what I want to mention. There's a great interview on the AV Club with Jim Davis in 2014 talking about this special. And that's where he mentioned he wanted to at least scare four-year-olds.
With spit.
But he said he wanted to start the story with something very familiar, Garfield getting excited about candy, going out trick-or-treating. But this scare four-year-olds line might be my favorite interview quote of all time, because it's absolutely true, and he absolutely meant it. But when designing this old man, who doing the math is 110 years old at this point, he kept having to coach the artist, like, no, you need to make him older, add more wrinkles. So that spittle was probably as intentional as it looked. He even said in the interview, he's like, we needed to make one eye look different from the other. We needed to just make him look as uncomfortable as possible.
Yeah. I mean, you don't accidentally get that spittle in an animation.
No.
And it's such a weird detail to put in, and so unsettling, even all these X number of years later. And even though I'm in my 40s, it still is like, why would they do that? It's gross. It's weird. In this last viewing, like I said, minutes before recording, the thing I couldn't help but notice is how great, like, outside of all the disturbing stuff going on, how great the hand animation, the animation and drawing of that character's hands are. Hands are incredibly hard to draw.
Oh, yeah.
And the expressiveness and the pointing and the moving and the gesturing, and they're so gnarled, and it's just fabulous.
It really is. That's what wins you an Emmy, folks.
Right. It really is an amazing example of animation, and it's astounding. It truly is astounding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you pair that with the deep, chilling voice of Lindsay Workman, the late Lindsay Workman at this point.
This island has a secret, a deep, dark secret it has held for 100 years.
What would we know them from?
Not a lot, because he was very much a character actor from the late 50s into the early 90s, and IMDb lists him as being known for just one-off appearances on all kinds of TV shows. But up at the top, IMDb said this is what he's known for. So the number one role of that is a supervisor on the original Westworld.
Okay.
And the restaurant maitre d' in The Naked Gun 2.5, The Smell of Fear, who shows up once just to ask, your coat, sir? Yes, it is.
Wow.
But no, we know him from other Garfield specials. This is not Lindsay Workman's sole appearance in the Garfield universe. Before this, in Garfield on the Town, he's the voice of Garfield's own grandfather.
Oh. Wow.
Same voice.
Is he as old and creepy in that? I don't remember it as well as I remember this.
He's old, but not like creepy. He's just scruff old cat.
Hmm. I mean, some of his reads, the way he interprets these lines are so great.
Mm-hmm.
And like you could quote everything that he says, but the one that really hits home for me is after he finishes his story, Garfield is just staring at the camera for like a beat.
Yes.
And he says, "Do you believe?"
Believe it, my friend. And that's just, that's the, I gave myself chills.
It's so good.
Do you believe this?
Believe it, my friends.
I love it. It gets me every time. Do you believe
that is, now I do have to show this to the kids this year because I want to see,
Oh, that believe it. I could die happy if this is like, can you believe I'm dying? Believe it!
Oh, dear. Like, well, you mentioned that. Lindsay Workman's other appearance in the Garfield universe was in his Nine Lives. He's the voice of God himself.
There you go.
Who creates the perfect animal and instructs his staff to give it nine lives because it would make a good story.
Well, hopefully it's the last voice I hear before I die and go on to nothingness. But I fear it's...
That'd be nice.
Yeah. I'll go out with a smile to be like, believe it, there's nothing. Yep.
So the old man says he was a 10-year-old cabin boy at the time, and he's a spry 110-year-old because Garfield turns to Odie to basically say, cool story, bro. Well, we got to get out of here. You want to come too? And the old man is gone. He bolted out of the door and down to their boat, which he steals to get off the island, which also means there goes the candy.
That's the thing, though, is you don't see him run down there. And that's the maybe the most fantastic joke in this whole special is that he turns back and it's like, well, he disappeared. Was he even really there? And then they go out to the boat and he's stealing their boat. So he's not a ghost. He didn't disappear. He literally just ran away and stole their boat. And that is amazing. That is so amazing. Like, just a really well timed out like beat of a joke.
Yes.
In there. And he takes their candy. They're stranded on the island. The clock starts chiming. And in order for them to try and stop whatever horror is about to happen at midnight, as the old man says, they actually try and break the clock, which is another really great joke. Like, if the clock doesn't strike 12, midnight won't come. And that's such a joyous, like, little kid type of idea. And I really appreciate it.
I did too, yeah. Because, and I can't blame the old man, because if I knew ghosts from my former employers were coming at midnight, I wouldn't stick around either. But I also wouldn't wait till 5 minutes before to do that. But again, old man saw a window of opportunity and flew out of it.
Yeah, so do you think that he was just kind of there on that island? How did he get there? Why was he waiting for a boat to steal, to leave?
I don't know if the pirates left him there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, do you think he was...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's where they buried the Trevor. Like, they landed on that island. It was part of the story. But
so you think he's been there for like 100 years?
Could be.
Just sitting there. It's not so bad.
I don't know. Just watching like a neighborhood develop around him.
You know, seems like not so bad of a job. You know, as long as you get 3 square meals, it's fine.
And then you have that ominous long case clock that it's like the loudest, most ominous, but it's the Undertaker's bell, basically.
Well, they built them good back then. 100 years ago, they built the best grandfather clocks back then.
Yeah, it's really not far chucked. Off anyway, because up to the dock comes a ghostly pirate ship, and out of the water comes the most terrifying, glowing pirate ghosts my innocent 5-year-old eyes had ever seen.
Yeah. Oh, are you hoping to watch this children's TV show about a cartoon cat and his dog pal getting candy? Well, here's some nightmare fuel for you.
Oh, yeah.
In the shape of ghosts that look like they're glowing chalk, like the ones from the end of Fantasia that just look no types of friendly and all types of evil. Surprise! It's the third act, and you're not sleeping tonight, nope. 5-year-old Mike.
Nope. I do want to talk about that effect, though, because it's very impressive for a one-off TV special in 1985. Again, you compared it to Fantasia, which is high praise for a one-off TV special. So the ghosts were drawn in this white, and the aim was to get that swirly, cross-dissolve kind of effect, and the glowing was achieved using a technique called a double burn. And it's super effective, because first you see the glowing ship, and that's unlike anything else in this universe. And then some glowy puddles moving in the water, and up out of that creeps this skeletal hand, followed by the rest of the pirate ghosts. Just skeletons with hats and headscarves, and it's so out of place. And add to that, that double burn glowing effect, and they jump off the screen and right into my soul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I've lived with this special so long that the true horror of these designs don't really resonate with me anymore. In the same way that, like, if you were to say, I don't know, live in a room full of spiders for 40 years of your life, you might just, it's a spider, you know, who cares? You know, living with it for so long, it has numbed me to the horror. But watching it for this podcast made me really think, like, I was 8, and this is not cool. Like, this is probably, I mean, I think at that point I had already seen Fantasia. So, I had seen some scary ghosts at the end of that, but I kind of liked it. But yeah, this isn't the normal stuff, you know, like, yeah, it's probably not great. And I mean, you know, you said Jim Davis wanted to scare the pants off of 4-year-olds. I was 8 and I didn't like it so much.
Right. No.
Yeah.
Rousing success, but
yeah.
And if you listen carefully in the background, there's even a heartbeat at one point. This is Hitchcock stuff. Toned down enough to spoon feed to children, but not too much that it scarred us for life. But
did you, in this scene when the ghost showed up, do you remember falsely the hat reacting in fright? Now, I don't know if this is because I owned the book, and I think the hat might have reacted to things going on in the book, like the skull and crossbones.
I don't remember it happening in the special, but it definitely has that Wade Duck effect in the book.
Yeah. Yeah, so like maybe I'm just remembering that book, which I haven't read in years, but I assume it was in the book. I'm glad it's not really the Mandela effect here that everyone likes to talk about when it's just like, oh no, that's just you misremembering things. There's no alternate universe. Don't worry.
There is an alternate universe here. It's in print.
Yeah, and right. So it would be in the book and not in this. But in my mind, every year when I go to watch this special, I look for the hat reacting. And when it doesn't, I have to remind myself, oh, no, that's right. That was in that book that you used to read as well. One of the fun jokes is they hide in the cabinet and they're like, the ghost won't find us in here.
Well, first Odie tries to hide in a flower pot before they settle on that cabinet against the wall.
Which is so adorable. Yeah. When Odie's head is in the flower pot and there's like no animation. It is like a still. Odie's head is in a flower pot and Garfield is behind him doing his mean face. And he goes, not there.
There, dummy.
Fantastic. I think the third act of this is, I think we're building a case for the third act of this to be maybe one of the best third acts of any animated holiday special.
I vote for that. Yeah.
Right? Like, what could you put up against this? The third act of say, like Charlie Brown Christmas has all that, like, ooh, true meaning of Christmas, blah, blah, blah. You know, we want the gifts and the
trees. And then nothing. He just passes Snoopy's house and it's like, first prize. And then it just ends so abruptly.
Right? But this, we're building tension. You're getting jokes coming left and right in there. They hide in the cabinet. Odie sneezes. The doors fly open. They're having these stupid grins on their face. And the way they close the doors, just like, maybe they didn't see us.
Oh, more scary trumpets. Did you make that your ringtone?
Oh, I need to. I think I need to for October. That. Yes. Fantastic. I mean, the beats in this. It's like one beat scary, one beat comedy, one beat scary, one beat comedy. I don't know what I'm feeling anymore. Honestly, I'm worn out.
That's part of the whole gag of having to scare four-year-olds. It's like, nah, we'll throw in a laugh every once in a while just to really throw them off their game.
Yeah, right.
The game just that they have as a four-year-old.
Make them feel safe. And then, oh, ghosts again.
And they rush out of the cabinet past the pirates and down to the dock, and the only way out of there is to jump in and swim for it. But before they jump, they turn around a few times and you just see this cloud of glowing dust and just skulls and bony hands coming after them toward the screen. It's the stuff of nightmares.
Yep. Slack-jawed skull going, ah, 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 and hands grasping out of this cloud of miasma. It's, I mean, even though, you know, it's just like they're just zooming in on a little repeated GIF animation type thing. It works. It's great. You feel the tension. Mm-hmm. Garfield and Odie jump into the water. Garfield realizes he can't swim. And so my question here is, did Garfield actually die, and is everything since
a
Jacob's Ladder situation?
That's the true message behind Garfield minus Garfield. He really is minus Garfield. Oh, I just love how that's his reaction. Just, rats, I forgot, I can't swim. Just like, duh, hamburgers, I'm drowning. Down I go.
He upends, he goes head first down, his feet follow. Yeah. Odie then dives in, saves his life, brings him to shore. Happy ending. It's great. It has everything.
But there is a second or two where you just see Garfield's pirate hat float up and he's struggling downstream a bit. So when you're little and you've already seen everything else this special has thrown into your life, you don't know how this is going to end. Whatever handle you thought you had on reality at this early point in your life has been obliterated. But they make it this short.
I love that at 5 years old, little Mike is like, I don't know what to believe anymore. I think Garfield could have died.
I don't remember crying at this. I just remember being stone-faced.
Yeah, because they've, like, look, like I said, you're sitting down to watch Garfield, a good yuck time. Like, this is Saturday morning, Sunday comic paper strip time. Like, you're not expecting the ghosts you just saw. You're not expecting the crazy old man you just saw.
Right.
Like, all no holds barred at this point. They could kill Garfield. I don't know. Like, it might just be the next morning you'll wake up, there's an obituary of Garfield, and that's it. It's over. So, yes, who knows? They've already just blown my mind by this point. So, yes, you don't know. Garfield could actually die in this.
But what we see on screen, they do make it to shore, with the island now far enough in the distance that they're assumedly safe. And as they walk home, Garfield hits the nail on the head when he said he's had nightmares that look like birthday parties compared to tonight. Mm-hmm. But that is when Odie finds their stolen boat left ashore with their bags of candy still intact. How nice of the old man to just leave them there.
Well, I figure he's 110. Unless there's some Werther's in there, he's not really taking that candy, right? I mean, it has to be like sorbitol candy at that point. When you're 110, he's probably very diabetic. I mean, how good was the healthcare back 100 years ago?
The lozenges wrapped in wrappers that look like strawberries.
Yes. I actually like those.
They're good, but they're in every grandparent's house.
They sure are. Especially the best ones are the ones that aren't wrapped individually. They're just individual candies that are all stuck together as one big piece.
Like, well, I guess I'm having eight of these.
Yeah, right. And I mean, you know, you living in Florida and with the humidity, you understand those are all turning into one piece of candy.
Oh yeah,
like that. Like they didn't,
Florida does that to marshmallows. Are you kidding?
Oh man.
Quick notice, here we see the boat has a name written on the back, Carolyn, which is the name of Jim Davis's wife at the time. So that's cute.
Wait, what do you mean at the time?
He remarried. Uh-huh. They divorced and he remarried.
All right. So and he has this constant reminder of his lost love.
Oh, dear.
When every year he watches this, he's just like, if I could rename it, I would. I don't know what he's
saying. Second wife hates it.
Yeah. Do we have to watch this, Jim? You know Carolyn's name is in that every year. And then he sees the name of the boat and he just starts crying. Oh, Jim, not again.
Well, finally home safe in his bed, a gracious Garfield admittedly gets out of character for himself and gives Odie his whole bag of candy that he earned for saving his life a, quote, 18 zillion times. And here's where there's some controversy. Not at that 18 zillion number. That's an exaggeration. But because we can't have nice things. The only time we see Odie actually save Garfield's life is when he pulled him out of the river. There is, however, an addition to this story in the printed comic adaptation that we've mentioned a few times.
Mm-hmm.
So in this version, Garfield actually grabs at the treasure before he runs out of that haunted house, or that house. We'll taunt it now, and manages to get away with a ring. And then we see them arrive home with their candy and find the pirate ghost waiting for them outside their front door.
Mm-hmm.
So they run up a tree and the pirates are just sitting down at the bottom of it going nuts. And Odie motions to the ring that's now in Garfield's finger. He takes it off, drops it to the ghosts who take it and just go away and leave them alone. That's it. So that happened.
They poof. They poof away.
And some lovable perfectionists out there in internet land have taken that scene to have been cut from this special to satisfy the 18 zillion statistic Garfield throws out at the end there.
Do you think it was ever intended to be? I mean, based on what's in the book, I don't know. What's the true story there? Is it an extra scene that was added for the book? Or
I
was
think so. I think that's the story I read.
Right? Like, or was the book meant to be like the framework of the special and then it was removed? Well, the world may never know. Unless...
I think they added it, but I do want to touch on the artwork of the book. Is just, especially for the scenes with the old man, he's creepy in the animated special. They draw him even creepier in this book.
A lot more shadows.
Yeah, a like lot the more pirate lights. Ghost, like you see like finer detail in like their skeletons, and like one of them has an eye that's still hanging out in there in this. And it's just, oh.
Wow. Well, I don't remember that. Well, now maybe I don't want to go home and find the book. Go home. Go home as if I live there. Go to my parents' house and find the book in the attic with the hornet's nest in the advent calendar. Whatever. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, it's a hornet's nest.
Yeah, a hornet's nest in the not advent calendar manger
the
scene.
The manger scene.
Yeah. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is Garfield has just given a bag of chocolate to Odie.
Oh, no.
So in this scenario, is Odie actually dead in every special after this as well? This is just the body count is rising.
Oh, man, everybody. This well, one. It might be because Garfield's last act of this special is now that he's nice and wired and he wants to see what's on TV. And it's the same old man wearing a pirate hat that looks suspiciously like the one Garfield lost in the river, welcoming us to an all-night pirate movie festival. And suddenly, oh, am I tired? And he crashes.
A couple things. All-night pirate movie festival, actually a thing? I've never heard of it. Normally it's horror movies. I get it. But tonight was the first time I said to my wife, is that supposed to be the same guy that we just saw? And she was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it supposed to be the 110-year-old cabin boy? Or is it like, oh, it's just kind of like them? What are we meant to believe? What's the moral of the story, Mike?
I read it as same guy. He's on TV. I don't know if the ghost story he told Garfield that ended up being 100% true is one that he's going to tell in this all-night pirate movie festival, but I don't know if that's Garfield seeing images in his head as he's turning on the TV, but boy, how nice that Garfield's able to sleep soundly after all that, because yeah. I sure didn't.
Well, he's so exhausted. You know, his adrenaline was so high for so long that he's coming down. He's just going to need to zonk out at that point.
I guess, but I don't know. It took me a while as a kid. I remember it. This and All Dogs Go to Heaven preceded what might have been the worst night's sleeps of my life.
You weren't comforted by the fact that there was an afterlife?
I wasn't comforted that there was a dog hell.
Right. Yeah, but you know, because they're a ghost, that means that there's something. And isn't something better than nothing?
It's something is better than nothing.
I guess.
As this special kind of, there's your moral. Something is better than nothing.
Did you have dogs growing up?
I did. Yes. Mm,
see, so yeah, the idea of a dog hell was probably a little bit more prescient to you. Like, oh no, Mr. Nutter Butters, he's being tortured. Whereas I wasn't allowed to have dogs, so.
My kids are not allowed to have dogs because I'm allergic.
So you don't let them have dogs. You don't let them watch Garfield.
I like breathing, Jeff.
There's probably pills to help you breathe. I'm allergic too. It's not going to stop me. As soon as I can get one, I'm going to get a dog, and I'm going to get puffy eyes and
there you go.
Wheezing. Maybe fall, go to die while I'm asleep. I don't know.
No,
it's not worth it.
Any final thoughts on Garfield's Halloween Adventure?
Oh, it's the best. It really is the best. Like every year, people say, I have to watch this, I have to watch that for Halloween or Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever. This, for me, is down to definitely like final five of have to watch every holiday season, for any holiday. And you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like given all the holidays, the things that I would need to watch spread out over those, you know, I think this is number one. I think this is maybe my soup to nuts beginning to end most enjoyable holiday special ever.
It's definitely my favorite Halloween special. Like leagues and bounds over Great Pumpkin. People praise Great Pumpkin. It jumps around too much, which is necessary for the Peanuts gang. You need to catch up with Linus and the Pumpkin Patch, and Snoopy is the World War One Flying Ace, and Charlie Brown getting dumped on for merely existing.
Right.
But I feel like having to only follow Garfield and Odie flows better as a story, and that abrupt turn into ghost story territory makes it a much longer-lasting impression than the kid waits all night for Weird Pumpkin Santa.
Yeah.
But Garfield is a fantastic gateway into light horror with jokes, and I haven't gone a Halloween since without watching it.
Yep. It's great. If you've made it to this far in the podcast and have never seen it, that's weird, but please go out and watch it.
You can find it. It's on places where it probably shouldn't be on the internet, but it's easy to find if you look. Well, Jeff, thank you for revisiting this with me. I couldn't have survived this episode without you.
No, thank you for having me on. Again, as I said, one of my favorites. I can, and as you have just heard, definitely could talk about it at length for a really long time.
Well, if people want to give your living room drapes a taste of their own broadsword, where can they find you on the internet?
Oh, probably on Twitter or Instagram at SummerJam, SOMMERJAM. I post about pretty much everything I do there.
And you can find show notes for this episode at adventcalendar.house and say hi on Twitter at AdventCalHouse. Season 3 starts December 1st, and I better make this announcement now due to some real-life happenings. I'm making a change in how I'm doing this show going forward. So, I'm only doing 12 episodes starting December 1st, and I'm going every other day up to Christmas Eve. Then, I'm going to do the second half next summer, and we can count down to Christmas in July together.
Nice.
So that's how this season is going to go, and if I like it, we'll keep it. I hope you'll tune in then. For now, for Jeff Sumagee, from inside a dusty old cupboard that I pray doesn't aggravate my allergies, this is Mike Westfall saying, beware of the icy patch.
Believe it!
The Advent Calendar House is part of the Christmas Podcast Network, located conveniently at ChristmasPodcastNetwork.com.
You love Christmas, sure, but sometimes the same old traditions are too traditional. Sometimes you want to see Santa stuff a kid in his sack. Sometimes you want Christmas dinner to come alive and threaten you with knives and forks. Sometimes you just need Christmas to get a bit weird. Weird Christmas has you covered. Check out podcasts filled with annoying Christmas music, proof that Saint Nick came from magic mushrooms, and talk about Christmas specials so disturbing you won't sleep for days.
Now available on iTunes and SoundCloud.
WeirdChristmas.com. Oh, oh, holy Mary, that's different.
Next time on the season premiere of the Advent Calendar House...
A Dickens classic gets a Disney twist.
Wow.
It's Mickey, Donald, the whole Disney gang.
I'm the ghost of Christmas past.
Together again in a brand new featurette.
I thought you'd be taller.
Mickey's Christmas Carol.